It's time to go out and...
Hey, everybody, from that nightclub at the end of the world. This is Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth. I am with you. One more week again. How's everybody holding up? One more week again. It is February the 17th, 2013. Never thought I'd live to see the day. And I should also mention that had she lived, Madeline Hunt Rupert, my mother, would have been 91 years old today. It's a good thing she didn't. She was in really bad health when she died in December of 2001, but today would have been her birthday. Long story, long road with me and my mom, but there were some great lessons that came around that this year. And I had some big healings in Northern California and Sebastopol, realizing that it would not be possible to heal Mother Earth unless we who are made from her are also healed. And that led to, as I was tending crops and gardening and farming there, heal my mother, heal the earth, heal me, heal my mother, thinking my mother as the earth. And then it dawned on me that the relationship with her had to be healed. And there was a lot of bad stuff that happened along the way. But my mother, right after Pearl Harbor, left West Virginia, went to apply for work at the government and was given a New York Times crossword puzzle, which she solved in 17 minutes. And she wound up being a senior cryptanalyst at the Army Security Agency and the NSA after that. We had a rough life together. I'm an only child. I was her caregiver for the last 3 years of my life, or her life, excuse me. And there's a slip. And I had a big healing around her this year. So it's a pleasure and an honor tonight for me to wish my mom happy birthday wherever she is. I know she's doing better. And that's one step maybe closer toward us healing this planet, which gives us life. A couple of notes before we get into the meat of subject tonight. You know, I live in outside of Moffitt. I actually live in the north end of the San Luis Valley in south central Colorado. It's a five and a half hour drive either way to Denver or Albuquerque. There's nothing. We are boony central out here. It's 24 miles to the closest store in Crestone. But Crestone is, as of this last week, has lost its only gasoline pump. It is a town that is dependent upon fossil fuel. So the people that live there now have to drive. The closest place would be Sawatch, or Hooper, or in a worst case, Salida for them. Salida's close, but they now have to plan their travels with the understanding that if they use a quarter tank of gas going somewhere, they might be 50 miles from where they can fill up again. And so these are the trials that we face. And so I'm watching to see how all of that plays. It's 26 miles to Sawatch for me to get gasoline if I need to. So these are things you think about. And we're thinking about these things now because they're in our faces now. And it's pretty much in the faces of the rest of the world. So the collapse marches on. What can I tell you? I said I'd have some good news for you guys tonight, and I do. Actually, it's good news for me. I've been asked to go to L.A. There's a great TV show there called Media Mayhem. It's a weekly internet show that attempts to give their audience a chance to see what goes on behind the scenes in the media world. Through interviews with people who work in the world of media, they reveal truth about why certain stories are published. I know something about that. They help people become more discerning consumers of media, and it's a pretty slick egghead show that's on The Lip TV, thelip.tv, www.thelip.tv, and that show is Media Mayhem. I'm going to tape, a couple, maybe even three interviews with them out there, and they're picking up the freight. So I get to get out of here and get warm a little bit, and I get to eat some sushi because there's not a lot of sushi around out here, and that's one thing I'm craving. You have to factor that into your collapse preparations. How are you going to get sushi and wasabi, you know, when things get really tough? But it'll be a chance to warm up. It has been the coldest winter here in 30 years, and that's kind of a misnomer. About 3 weeks ago or so, we had about 2 weeks of a lot of minus zeros, a lot of minus sub-zero temperatures, got down to minus 22 several days, and it's been cold, and I'm going to get to warm up. It's been a little bit milder here lately, but I'm looking forward to seeing friends in L.A., and I'm wondering what kind of a shock it's going to be. It's been over 2 years since I've been there. I was back for a visit, but My consciousness is changing, and I trust yours is too, but this might lead to some good things for yours truly, and I'm looking forward to seeing some old friends, and I want to thank the people at Media Mayhem for arranging this. Allison Weiner used to write for the New York Times. She'll be interviewing me, and my good friend Mike Lustig is deeply involved in that. So, woohoo! I'm going to go eat some sushi and get warm and wear some flip flops for a change. So, we hang in there. Stuff can happen without our permission, and I wait to see where I'm going to be assigned next. And I want to thank everybody again who sent me all the birthday presents. I spent 4.5 hours yesterday writing individual letters to everybody that I could find that I had an address on. There's about 35 letters and a couple of packages going out tomorrow, just to thank you all for the generosity that has helped me get through a couple of struggles. So that we can keep doing what we do. And what we do is we help each other get through this shit. What we do is we find ways to view it and to understand it. And of course, this last week, it was, I believe, the day after I did the show that Chris Dorner was dead. And for me, that's over. His only value or my only interest, not in him per se, he's a profoundly interesting story, legend. But once he was dead, there was no more fruit to be gotten off of that tree. It will be written now, however it's going to be written, and I have not the slightest inclination to pursue the details of his death or anything else, because those stories have already been written, and there is no one to challenge them. I was particularly dismayed during the course of the Dorner event that screenshots started showing up from CNN, whether they were actual CNN scrolls across the bottom of the screen or not, I don't know. But one said that there was someone came out the back and they were pushed back inside. And then there was another one that showed up on my Facebook page that said body inside the cabin was that of a woman, not Chris Dorner. Now, it doesn't make any difference to me, the forensics of how those appeared. I am probably the guy in the whole world, but there were many of us who feasted on the inconsistencies, the gaffes, the horrendous reporting, the conflicting stories that came out after the attacks of September the 11th. The bad guys have learned. It may well be that CNN is deliberately rolling those false things just to keep the conspiracy, the folks who have to have something to dig into, happy. But it occurs to me that they can do whatever they want to now, because nobody held them accountable after September the 11th, and they know that no one is going to hold them accountable now. They can put up whatever they want to. So I'm not losing any time over what happened with Chris Dorner, but that leaves an enormous issue about what he was, and his impact was profound. Chris Dorner was a Los Angeles police officer. Chris Dorner was also an officer in the United States Naval Reserve, having served active combat tours. He had a command, and Chris Dorner was also an educated black man. And I know something about all three. Now, obviously, I'm not black, but if you followed me for any length of time, you'll know that from my confrontation with CIA Director John Deutsch at Locke High School 16 and a half years ago in 1996, and for my time working in L.A., I have spent much time in the black community. I'm looking at a picture above my desk where I'm standing next to Kathleen Cleaver of the Black Panther Party, Cynthia McKinney, and Ward Churchill of the American Indian Movement. But Dick Gregory made me his white son, and I spent a lot of years and a lot of times listening and living and learning and working and being an activist with. And I do have some understanding of what it's like to be a black man, and certainly a black man in LAPD. But this was an educated black man with a college degree, and he was also a cop. But as I have said before, I think probably the biggest schism, the biggest fault line beneath the facade of a normally functioning society is the fact that he was a warrior. He was worked with special operations personnel. He was tasked by JSOC. He was a Riverine. He put SEALs on the beach. He was a combat soldier. And he fought, and I will say this again, I do not justify what he did. I do not excuse what he did. I do not celebrate what he did, but I understand what he did. because special forces from their inception in the 1960s have operated with playbooks, and what they do is they kill families. They kill the family members of people that the CIA wants to shut up or cooperate. They have done it from Southeast Asia to Central America to South America to the Middle East to Europe. And he fought with the style, and that's why nobody wanted him to talk. Chris Dorner was a public relations nightmare for the infinite growth paradigm, because it was almost impossible to not see that he was all three of those things at the same time. And I put myself in the shoes of police officers out there now who are, let's say they're just police officers, but they worry about the skill sets of so many veterans who have come back. I'm more identifying now with the Warriors, with the veterans, with the Rangers, with the Marine Recon, with the Special Forces, with those guys who, you know, all the combat MOSs that went out there and did. I more identify with them now than I do with police, because I remember Shamar Thomas standing up in New York City. God bless you, Shamar Thomas. There's Shamar Thomas. Doesn't Chris Dorner sound something like Shamar Thomas? Shamar didn't kill anybody. But he saw the same things, and you know that those same energies were crashing in him. And the way two active duty members of the 75th Rangers were beaten, well, one was shot in the head with a tear gas canister, 40-millimeter projectile, and one active duty member was beaten. It was one of the most savage beatings I've ever seen in my life on videotape. And the veterans who have come back from over there, who know how sick and how screwed up it is, have little tolerance for police officers, because beating innocent people or hurting innocent people or kicking innocent people, or as was the case with Occupy, spraying them, people who had no guns, who were just exercising their rights, they have little or no tolerance for that. Now, I would picture myself also now being a black police officer in any city in the country, asking deep soul-searching questions as a result of the issues that Chris Dorner brought up. I firmly believe that Dorner was illegally fired. Don't justify what he did, but he had a great prima facie case. And is that what you get for standing up? And what if you're all three of those things, knowing that only one of those can stand up at the same time without selling out the other two? Well, those cracks are left in the system, and those tensions are still there, and Chris Dorner's legacy will not be forgotten. He is a legacy now. But as I was thinking about this, I'm going to play a song, and then I'm going to read you some excerpts from an essay. But my dear friend Scott Hall had written and asked to hear a special song. We're going to play Inner Reach again in the second half of the show. You guys loved it so much. We didn't get another one ready for this week, but we're going to do that. But this is kind of a setup for it. And Scott wanted this song, and as soon as I read the title and knew who it was, I said, well, of course. These guys played at Woodstock. The group is 10 years after, and the song is I'd Love to Change the World, Wouldn't We All?
Thank you. keeps on bleeding, nation bleeding, still more bleeding economy. Life is funny, skies are sunny.
Clear Vision a long time ago. That song was from like 1971, 10 years after. I'd love to change the world, wouldn't we all? And now that there's a much greater urgency to it, the hunger is more apparent as well, and let's hope our energy is producing some changes. All the stuff with Chris Dorner and some of the stuff that even Gary was talking about, this fragmented view of the world, which is totally psychotic, reminded me of, I've written some great essays in my life, and I've really had fun writing some of them. I mean, As the World Burns, Global Corp, I had some fun. But there was one that I wrote on my old blog, which was before we started CollapseNet, that was published on MikeRupert.blogspot.com in January of 2009. That's about 4 years ago. And this so hits home, and it so strikes to and speaks to the problem that we have in viewing everything, because we know, or we are beginning to understand, the consciousness is emerging that we are connected to everything, and only when we view things that way can we find answers. But this essay was called The Remainders of Long Division. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I made some really good points. The Remainders of Long Division, 2009, and the Settling of Overdue Accounts, by Michael C. Rupert. That's me, Tracker of Truth. January 5, 2009, I have had a very few strong and clear core beliefs and lingering questions since about the time I passed from toddler to childhood. I remember wondering with great intensity, when I was about 3 or 4, what happens to my waste when I flush the toilet? Where does it go? Where does the trash we throw out go? I realized even in 1955, yeah, I'm old, that all we were doing was moving a mess from one place to another. Then just a few years later, as I was taught long division, I would get a problem like 51 divided by 1561. Diligently, I would draw the long division box, enter the numbers, and start figuring it out. But after a long time and several sheets of paper, I would come out with an answer of 0.032671364509929. It wouldn't stop. I raised my hand and I asked a teacher, and she said that some division problems never worked out. She explained to the class that what we did was to round off the answer to the first one or two places. I remember that my immediate reaction, marked by cognitive dissonance, was, well, what happens to all that stuff you chop off? It doesn't matter, said the teacher. It doesn't matter. At the time, my father was with Martin Marietta, now Lockheed Martin. He was also a navigator on SA-16 RC rescue planes in the Maryland Air National Guard. What the teacher told me about division contradicted a world dominated by my father's military everything-must-be-neat-life philosophy, where absolute precision in thought and action determined who lived and who died on a battlefield. I could not possibly have formulated the thought at that age, but I intuited that there was a conflict between the precision of mathematics and the way the world I lived in was managed. Neat and orderly under an empirically defined system without natural, spiritual, or holistic groundings just meant chopping off a lot of insoluble problems and sending them someplace. Things might not work out perfectly in math, but might there not be some other way to view and resolve problems, something different from the way that we solve them now. Flash forward to 1974, I'm now a UCLA honors grad, and in my first year on the street as a probationary LAPD officer in South Central LA, I saw things I could never have imagined. Lives not only wasted, but way outside the neatness of society's glorified self-image. Criminals and victims alike fell through large gaps in a paradigm that was compelled to sell itself as being able to resolve everything with neat and neatly explained answers. Almost instantly, I viewed police work as the task of playing trash collector for the, quote, remainders of human life. It didn't matter in that ecosystem, but by 2004, when Rubicon was published, I had firmly concluded that the impending collapse of industrial civilization had everything to do with remainders. It had to do with the remainders left over after dividing an infinite growth paradigm by finite energy. It had to do with dividing ethnically and economically functioning geographic regions by arbitrarily drawn British borders, as happened from Jordan to Bangladesh between 1900 and 1947. It had to do with the division of labor, land, commodities, natural resources, life, and the ecosphere, all of which are limited by a free market, quote-unquote, economy that was not free but manipulated and which required infinite growth. It had to do with the division of an American people self-gratified by a manufactured public image, some of which was true, being divided by CIA-sponsored coups from Iran to Indonesia to Guatemala to Brazil to Vietnam, from coups inside this nation, i.e. JFK, MLK, and RFK, to the occupation of Iraq. It had to do with dividing so-called clean coal by the monumental toxicity of coal's actual waste that will never be cleaned up at any price. It had to do with dividing nuclear energy by the poison that will remain deadly for hundreds of millions of years. It had to do with blithe and dishonest statements that there were 2 trillion barrels of oil and shale by the fact that it's not oil but kerogen, and it has to be cracked out of rock by heating it to a third the temperature of the sun, by using enormous amounts of fresh water, by destroying millions of acres of productive farm and ranch land, and by the fact that it will never be viable by any standard. What happens when we divide infinite economic growth with its 96% correlation to greenhouse gas emissions into the atmosphere? What happens when we divide the 2,000 or so POW MIAs left in Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia by Henry Kissinger's statement that we got everybody out? What happens when you divide the fact that a 1998 CIA Inspector General report established conclusively that the CIA dealt drugs by the fact that the Congress said the matter was closed and there was no evidence? What happens when you divide the fact that Wall Street needs to launder hundreds of billions in drug money to stay afloat by the rule of law? Divide the savings and loan scandal by Enron and WorldCom, plus the fact that there were 3 times more paper mortgages being traded as derivatives than there were actual properties. When you divide that by the fact that we never mustered the will to fully address any of these crimes when we should have. What happens when you divide the fact that after scheduling war games to move most fighters out of the Northeast air defense sector on 9/11/01, Dick Cheney injected 22 false radar blips under radar screens and was also commanding a live-fly hijack drill as the attacks occurred? Divide that by the fact that the official version is that 19 hijackers operating from caves did it all alone. what happens when you divide the absolutely illegal imprisonment without trial and habeas corpus of all the detainees at Guantanamo by the fact that no country wants to be the rug that the U.S. sweeps those remainders under. Where do the remainders go? I can tell you one thing based upon a lifetime of study and experience. All these little tiny things that are cut off and forgotten, minimalized, thrown away, go somewhere where they too collect compound interest of a spiritual, energetic, and emotional nature. On this blog and in the world at large, there is one group which looks at our current problems and insists on analyzing things under the erroneous assumption that these problems can be predicted, analyzed, and treated by resorting to more long division with larger and larger remainders. These people will always be wrong, and they will never grasp what it is that now threatens life on the planet, namely the way they view and respond to it. Remainders can be especially dangerous when it comes to race, politics, and geostrategy. Those who can and will adapt to a new emerging paradigm will be those who have freed themselves from long division. They will be the people who discard the notions that everything has a neat empirical answer, that logic and technology will find ways to make all the remainders go away. The survivors will be the ones who throw out long division as a primary methodology for perceiving the world they live in. I'm going to stop there, but it is so clear that Christopher Dorner was a huge pile of the remainders of long division, from police work, from race relations in this country, and from the military and his time as a warrior and a combat veteran. There is more poetry in his story, and I do not believe, and again, I'm not championing, I would like to know what the heck happened at his trial board, because that was just shaky on the face of it. It was ridiculous. But I can guarantee you that Chris Dorner's legacy are serious cracks in the foundation of the power of the police state. Let me say that again. Chris Dorner was a landmine that probably rocks the foundations of the emerging police state. And, of course, the NDAA is hurriedly moving toward the Supreme Court, and it's apparent that Obama's already using it. But there are going to be people asking long, deep, and hard questions, and that's what we need now. I mean, I have said that I could foresee a time, and it's been discussed quite a bit. We're going to take a break here in a second, when those enforcing the law would no longer do it because they couldn't do it anymore. And that, as any revolutionary will tell you, is when the old paradigm is dead. So here we are on the Lifeboat Hour on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. It is time for a station break at the bottom of the hour. We're going to continue with this theme after we come back from the break. Here at PRN-FM, this is Tracker of Truth. I'll be back with you in just a couple minutes.
This is PRN.FM,
PRN.FM,
the number one station for progressive minds.
Progressive minds.
This is Mike Feder. I'm the host of Occupied Territory, broadcast every Thursday on PRN.FM at 2 p.m. Eastern. This show is based on the principles of the Occupy movement and at the bottom of everything, income inequality. So tune in every Thursday at 2 p.m. to hear interviews with people who are out there doing it and articles, essays, and rants by yours truly on the Occupy movement and its ideals and how we can set democracy straight without using the system to do it. That is PRN.FM, the Progressive Radio Network. We're moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us. And you better come with us, you know what I'm saying?
This is Professor Mickey Huff, Director of Project Censored. Join me, along with the head of the Media Freedom Foundation, Dr. Peter Phillips, for the Project Censored show every Monday morning at 11 Eastern Time, right here on the Progressive Radio Network at PRN.FM. For the past 36 years, Project Censored has covered the news that doesn't make the news and tells you why. By highlighting underreported stories and providing cutting-edge media analysis, we can counter the corporate media's top-down, managed news propaganda. Be the antidote to the truth emergency we face. Be media literate. So don't miss the Project Censored show every Tuesday morning at 11 Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. Tune in and be part of media democracy in action. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
PRN would like to thank its listeners for making us number one on Zeno Radio's phone service and also the top searched internet radio station on Google. Thank you for helping us move forward.
Hello, this is Richard Martin to remind you that I'll be looking out for you on Mondays and Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time to give you the latest from the financial world and to let you know just how bad things are getting. I'll be telling you things you'll never get to hear in the mainstream media. So join me here on the Wake Up Call. You can listen to the show at any time from the archives, and if you like the show, rate us on iTunes. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Progressive Radio Network, now on your iPod or smartphone. Go to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com and click on your device to hear us anytime and anywhere. ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, your home for news and information.
Your life is a good life. That's a tried and true. Give it up for the man of the moment. The man with the shark and complaint.
Say a prayer for the new white trash. That's from our first album, our first CD, Double Wide. And we're going to play a song from our new one just now, here in a few minutes. You can find us at newwhitetrash.com. We're still behind on the money and all that stuff, getting it all set up. But we are making some outstanding music here, and we hope that that has life, because it is the music, the art, the vibration, the love that we are beginning to realize that really does make a difference. There was one last paragraph in my essay, the Remainders of Long Division, that I like. Until the human race achieves a collective wisdom that acknowledges, incorporates, and balances remainders instead of ignoring them, then mass extinction, the ultimate mark to market, is and will be our only ultimate destination. How far we go in that direction is up to us. And this is the war that we're all fighting together now. If you want to check in tonight, I love it when you guys check in. I'm going to open up the lines. The number is 1-888-874-4888, 1-888-874-4888. Let me hear from you. You want to check in. But now all this fragmented stuff that's going on, it's a hard week around the world. I mean, they're going to drain a lock in Edinburgh, outside of Edinburgh, Scotland, to mine the coal. Destroy the habitat, destroy the fisheries, destroy the life that's there, drain the lock, fresh water, who needs it, Russia Today did an excellent story on the theme of water. NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, issued an alert on Valentine's Day, 14th, 3 days ago. Middle East loses freshwater reserves the size of the Dead Sea in 7 years. I remember when Stan Goff, my dear friend Stan Goff, retired Master Sergeant from Special Forces, who wrote the Tillman series, was writing for us at From the Wilderness so many years ago. He hit on the water problem in the Middle East very heavily then, and he saw it very clearly, and that's what the background work is. But this story that was published on the 14th in Russia Today, the Middle East is headed towards a water shortage crisis as NASA satellites show that reserves the size of the Dead Sea have been depleted in just 7 years, largely due to well drilling. Gotta have that infinite growth, man. Gotta build some more houses, have some more babies, and gotta sell them the ads. And Newly obtained results show that 144 cubic kilometers of fresh water, a volume nearly equivalent to that of the Dead Sea or Lake Tahoe, had been removed from the ground in the area that encompasses Turkey, Iran, Iraq, and Syria between 2003 and 2009. Now, last week we talked about how the Great Lakes are being drained for fracking, probably selling the fresh water, get bottled and sold in China. I don't know. They're going to say that they're selling canned air there now, too. So the Canadian government is just on a total rim. I mean, oh, my God, Harper, those guys are they may be biting off more they can chew than they can chew in Canada with what they have done. They have just issued a license to destroy what's left of that beautiful country and the habitats of tens of millions of people. So we see that that's just the Middle East. But aren't we beginning to feel now that the loss of fresh water for anywhere for is a loss of fresh water for all of us? Because that's the world that we live in. There are no remainders of long division that way. China's thick smog hit Japan this week. It's dangerous pollution. This was from Desdemona Despair, who have been catching some great stories. And the Japanese are saying they can't protect themselves, like it's an act of war from China. Yeah, okay. But the deterioration is accelerating. This was Agence France-Presse on 4 February. The suffocating smog that blanketed swaths of China is now hitting parts of Japan, sparking warnings Monday of health risks for the young and the sick. The Environment Ministry's website has been overloaded as worried users log on to try to find out what is coming their way. And the pictures were pretty telling. Now, unfortunately, Japan's radiation from Fukushima is not going to China, so there's not, you can't argue some kind of a fair trade deal between smog and radiation. Cattle are disappearing all over the U.S. amid drought, and it signals a beef rally. Of course, if you've been following that, in England they're eating horse meat, but that's because of poverty and collapsing economy and also shrinking herds. But in the U.S., the worst drought since the 30s is shrinking a cattle herd that's already the smallest since 1952. Get that. There's less cattle in the country, about the same size as there was in 1952, when there were only 210 million people in the country, signaling tighter beef supplies. And we can have long discussions about the energy that goes into the beef. But I think what's important to understand is that our food sources, our food supplies are disappearing. That's not something you can divide and cast the remainders of. But isn't that what you do if you go to the supermarket and say, well, I can still buy a steak, and so there's no problem? Remainders of long division. Germany has pulled lasagna off of shelves because horse meat's turning up in Germany, turning up all over Britain. And then we have, now this is kind of put this in the big cosmic picture. The Russian meteor causes a blast. 1,000 people were injured. Big meteor, but there were other large meteors that hit. There was one spotted over the Bay Area in San Francisco and Cuba as well. And Doug Lewis, my bandmate, was out on the porch just a couple days before the big asteroid passed through, and he saw a huge meteor strike up towards Mount Princeton, north of us. He said, you know, you could see this, and it was a big green fireball when it exploded and hit the ground. He didn't see the impact on the ground. It was behind a mountain, but it lit up the sky. Now, is it possible in your scheme of things, Horatio, if I was Hamlet, alas, Horatio, there are more things in heaven and earth, to see that there might be a connection between large, heavy volcanism, a major increase in earthquakes, meteor showers, sinkholes around the world? Do you not feel that maybe there is something synchronous going on here, something which was foretold? I don't know, but there's a lot of stuff going on. Russia Today did a very impressive story, a video that went up today. And I have to give great thanks to two guys, Robin Westenra down in New Zealand and Lee Deathcare Nelson in the UK, who feed wonderful stories to me all week. I get that, and plus I have the news desk at CollapseNet, and I get access to all those stories. But I want to thank Robin and Lee especially, because you guys are simpatico, and you're so helpful to me in preparing for the show. And my Facebook page is as well. It's very active, Michael C. Rupert. You might want to check that out. Not the public figure, but the personal one. But RT did a very impressive segment on soaring suicide rates in the UK. That's up on my Facebook page now. And, they single out one story, but it was a 23-year-old kid. And the bill collectors were after him so hard. He had a £5,000 student debt. He had a $3,000 credit card debt. And he killed himself. But those numbers are increasing rapidly, not only in the UK, and that was the connectedness question that I asked. Are we to assume that this is only happening in Great Britain? Well, is there something we can fix in Great Britain? It's a British problem. Well, how about this? Five people set themselves on fire and immolated themselves this week in France. Three of them in unemployment offices. These stories are up on the Facebook page, and they'll be on the World News Desk at CollapseNet, which is more complete. But this is happening all over the world. And it is not a French problem. It is not. It's a human problem. And this is where I keep coming back to the silver lining of Chris Dorner, and I have to tell you, it really messed with me, because I so identify with all three parts of him. Identify or understand. You know, the educated black man, Chris Dorner had been an explorer scout. He's one of those kids who, from when he was 16, his whole life was focused on becoming a police officer. Kind of like it was with me. It hit me when I was 17. And who devoted his whole life to doing everything that he thought he should do to prepare himself to be the kind of warrior or policeman that he wanted to be. Again, there's no justification for what he did, but he was a big man, and I will not insult the man's intelligence. He knew exactly what he was doing, and he knew exactly how it was going to turn out. But I think he was a hand grenade deep inside the psychic bowels of the infinite growth paradigm. A UN official is alarmed by the rise of food banks in the UK. This is from The Independent today. An explosion in the number of people forced to rely on food handouts in the UK could represent a human rights abuse, a top United Nations official has warned. The UK's growing food poverty crisis, which has been marked by a tenfold increase in the use of food banks since the start of the recession, has now attracted the attention of Olivier de Schutter, whoever he is, the UN Special Rapporteur on the Right to Food. Now, this is where I start to laugh. There is no right to food in nature. What nature offers is the right to balance. There are no entitlements to food. There are 7 billion people, and to approach this as if every mouth that we have created is entitled to food, leaving aside the debate of where and how it could be implemented if we all went to permaculture, but there is no entitlement to survival. That's the balance. And yet, we live in a world with increasing evidence that there were civilizations, very advanced civilizations that existed that have been hidden from us historically, that lived in perfect balance, that didn't have a population explosion, that weren't governed by fear, that had no weapons and didn't know war. 1-888-874-4888. Horse meat, again, is up all over. Catering giant Compass Group and White Bread, one of Britain's largest hotel chains, have found horse DNA products in products sold as beef that they're selling in their restaurants. Okay. Or, their food supplies. I'm going to save some more. We got some other things here. But you can see it, perhaps, if you look at all of this stuff. One of the fundamental problems is that they call this a French or German or an American problem, and it's not. These are all human problems. And as soon as 7 billion of us, or whatever the critical number is, 100th monkey, can really get it into our heads that all of these are our problems, share equally, then we're going to be much better. I'm seeing some writing from the board in New York. I'm assuming there's a caller, but I don't know yet. Oh, we do. We have Jonathan in Philadelphia. Are you there?
What's up, brother?
Hey, man.
How are you?
All right.
You know, I love your music. I'm a musician, too. Isn't it great to have music as an outlet?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I mean, you know, there are, for all of us who are adults, there are, you know, three or four tried and true things that kind of always work. But if you have music, man, you can put so much energy in there, and it kind of bleeds the pressure out, you know?
It's beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah.
Hey, listen, I got something I want to ask you about. I want you to do me a favor, if you can. I'm asking you to do it. I would do it, but I think you have a better chance at it than I do because you're famous and you're well-known. Max Kaiser, don't you think he's a great guy?
Oh, yeah. I've been on his show many times.
I know that. He knows about peak oil. He understands what's going on in the world. If you could do me a favor, if you could get a hold of him and tell him that every time he goes on Alex Jones' show, he discredits himself and makes himself look bad. You think you could do that for me?
I have relayed that to him privately, but he, like Christopher Dorner, is an adult male.
And
you know, isn't it strange that Alex Jones is turning up on CNN? I hit the CNN
page. You know
why?
It's all staged. I can see it. They put him on there. They have him act crazy.
Yes.
And then the other guy asked about 9/11. So that discredits the 9/11 movement. I think Alex Jones' job is to discredit the truth of 9/11.
Well, he's had many jobs, but I have not had. I've caught the man again falsifying stories. He's welcome to sue me anytime he wants to. I got the proof. You know, he makes up stories. And,
I know.
And
it's
so
terrible.
Well, you know, I just try to stay out of those imbroglios. I've had good times with Max Kaiser. Max has done some very good reporting. If he chooses to walk in those waters, you know, that's where he chooses to walk.
I know, doesn't it suck? Doesn't it piss you off? It just, because I don't know. I think Max is great. And,
yep.
You know, and by the way, you are, to me, the most person I respect. So much so, if aliens came to me and told me to take me to their leader, I would take them to you.
Whoa. Well, there's a thought, Jonathan. Thank you so much, man. I really appreciate that. We've got some callers stacking up, so you guys wanted to check in. I still got a song to play, but go out and have a steak sandwich for me, will you? All right. Still talking about the cows. All right. Ulysses in New Jersey, you there?
Mr. Mike, how are you?
All right, man.
I'm just going to let you know that I always download your program, but today I do the space and decided to call you and let you know that I really like your show, and it's wonderful that you always like holding space for us. And remember, you're not alone on this one.
Oh,
I want to ask you something. It has happened to me like the past weeks. I always wake up at 5 a.m. like sharp, and the other day I had like this like vivid dream, like really like that I could touch it, that I had my eyes closed, and I was able to see like a tree of light. I don't know if you can share it. I mean, what was that about?
Well, there's a lot of people who are in various stages of experiencing large, massive energy shifts. I have, thanks to ceremony, part of my third eye, if you're familiar with that, has opened. I have been seeing wonderful things. And I'm not going to try to explain them. I just wonder at them and take them as very, very loving, special reminders that there are so many other forces out there that are working, that are moving, and we hope that they are emerging. And I hope that there's a lot of us having experiences like that. And if you're not having them, ask for them. Say, I want to wake up. Say, I want to attune to higher frequencies. Say that I want to spread love in this world, because that is truly the only thing that's going to make a difference.
Well, you,
thank
well,
I'm you
sure
so
that you are like holding the torch. That's for sure. And thank you for all your work and all the best to you, man.
Namaste. I'm here holding space. That's what us old farts do. Denny in San Rochelle, California. You there?
I'm sure here, Mike. How are you?
Cool.
It's great to hear you again this week. I say prayers and hold you in my thoughts all the time. I'm calling about the remainders of long division here.
Yeah.
You know, when I was a child, I had this trouble with math too. Part of it was the way the numbers actually looked, and I thought, how do you get this shape to mean two or three or four. And it was never really explained to me until one of my students, who was of Kurdish extraction, explained how those angles work. And then suddenly things started falling into place for me with numbers. Mm-hmm. But I just think it's shocking how math gets forced on kids at an early age. I suspect to begin the training to, you know, be good little worker drones for the military-industrial complex, making their weapons of mass destruction.
I think it's kind of one of the ultimate crimes of the tyranny of Cartesian logic.
Yeah.
That it leads us to believe that everything is soluble, neat, like a 2+2 equation, and it is not. And that's one of perhaps the biggest crimes, and the crime is not the crime is that they try to make you believe that that's enough, and it's so incomplete.
The problem is that it's going to be criminal because they're doing it only out of their left brain and not asking the right brain's input in what numbers mean and what gets left behind.
So
speaking of the remainders of long division, this March 2013 issue of the National Geographic magazine did arrive at my door, and they have an excellent article in here. Right on the front page, it shows lots of flames with oil derricks in the background. America Strikes Oil, the promise and risk of fracking. But what I think is really to their credit is they're questioning this thing, which is unbelievable, I think. They ask, can the, on page 37, on the new oil landscape story here in this issue, can the inestimable values of the prairie, silence, solitude, serenity, be preserved in the face of full throttle development of extracting as much oil as possible, as fast as possible? It's great. It's a good article.
The sad part about that is, Denny, that's probably what's going to happen. And what was so sad about even that sentence was it's not just the solitude of the prairie. That's
no, it's
part
a
of
lot
the web
more.
Of life.
Yeah.
And it is so indispensable. We know that now that you can see, and people have been seeing the earth breathe and understanding that she is alive. The Amazon rainforests are the lungs, and everything has a vital place in the web of life. I'm not so sure that the powers that be are going to stop. I think they may be stopped, and that's what we hope to achieve with the 100th monkey.
But some of their mouthpieces are beginning to wake up. The fact that we see this here, as well as other evidence, on the Cambridge Forum at 2 o'clock in the morning on KQED, our local Bay Area NPR station, had on something last week called the Cambridge Forum. And the question was, can we have an infinite growth that's sustainable forever? Well, there be some part of this infernal machine is beginning to question its own values, which I think is evidence that God is beginning to come out here.
Let's hope.
On the playing. I mean that. What a slip. The playing field.
Okay. Denny, I'm sorry, we're kind of running short on time.
Yeah, I'll call you again another time. It was beautiful in Healdsburg today. You take care.
Thank you so much for calling, and thank all of you. I do believe that the spring is going to show a lot more evidence of this change in consciousness. I believe that there are more signs of it all the time. We wait for the light waves to show up and show us that this change of consciousness that we hunger for is coming, that it's underway. But in the meantime, the light waves are meeting and dancing in secret, and we can perhaps only feel them. But that's our song, Inner Reach. I'm going to close the show with that tonight. We played it last week. It's a brand new song. We'll have another couple more mixed for the next show from the new album, Inner Reach. This is Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth. Come sink into this song with me, and bring all your hopes into it with it, and open the door for the light. Here is Inner Reach.
All the street lights around me, in the wall-to-wall prison of my city, flickering dirty neon over alleys mean and dirty streets, while my neighborhood is torn down around me. Too many people on the zombie streets, and the sirens make an eerie sound around me. Makes me cold, makes me hot, makes me freeze. And it's getting hard in the inner reach. Ever strange beneath the streets, all around where all the light waves meet. With toys haunt the hallways, stuffing secrets up my sleeve. And the only country club around here is the cold cement under my feet. Most days I feel like a drowning man in a sea of drunken thieves. While this world goes on in a whirl around me, people look before they speak. And it's getting hard in the inner reach. Ever strange beneath the streets, all around where all the light waves meet. Explanations don't explain, and the conclusions don't conclude. When answers don't answer, and questions don't matter, and everything has gone so rude. Well, the stars incline but don't insist, and everything is done in a dancing twist. All around where all the light waves meet and dance, and it's getting hard in the inner reach. Ever strange beneath the streets, all around where all the light waves meet. Of Aquarius, this is the dawning of the age of Aquarius.